Jordan.
Well, welcome everybody. Good morning to you. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock for the next 2 hours. We're going to be talking about car and car repair issues. And what you do is first you got to call in, and that's 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And then what we do is you tell me like the year, the make, the model of the car you have, and then we're going to talk about symptoms. And then there is a Q&A there. So I ask you questions and you answer me the best you can. I'm going to do my best to send you in the right direction. And obviously that menu has lots of right directions. So that's how it works. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician. I've been in the auto repair industry for 39 years. It'll actually be 40 years this year in October. And I've actually owned independent shops since 1979, and I'm kind of, in the legal arena, I'm an expert in industry standards for car repair, which means I've testified in court and the judge has allowed me after they've tested my qualifications. So I kind of know what's right and what's wrong. And in addition to that, I have a best car repair shops list. And the best car repair shops list, I know every single one of those owners. I've known them for a very long time. We've all followed the same kind of repair strategy. You come in. We get your information for the work order. We talk about symptoms. We document the symptoms. We give you a diagnostic fee or a range. Then we go out and diagnose your car. And once we do that, then we get parts and labor, put that all together, call you with the estimate. Now, you okay the estimate under the conditions, you okay the estimate, then we perform the repair, and here's the important part. Afterwards, we verify that what we went in to fix is gone. So if we went in to fix an oil leak and we take it for a drive and come back and we have an oil leak in the same place, we didn't do a good job. So I've known these guys, and here's my promise to you. It's on my website, marksalem.com. Salem like the cigarette, marksalem.com. Here's my promise to you. If the shop doesn't perform on a complaint basis, the complaint has to go through the Better Business Bureau. The Better Business Bureau will send it to the Auto Advisory Committee most of the time. If the Auto Advisory Committee and the Better Business Bureau tells the shop to fix the car or make a refund, and the shop refuses, then I will. I'll fix your car or make a refund with a limit of $5,000. I've never had to do that. As a matter of fact, I probably have had 3 complaints since 1988. So the guys are really performing quite well. I'm very proud of them. And obviously, if you live in a particular part of town and you're interested in what shop I say is a good shop, then go to marksalem.com and click on the best shop links. This portion is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair. He's been on our list for a very long time, and I know Brian and Thelma. I not only know Brian and Thelma, but I was part of the generation, and I know their dads and their uncles, who have also been in the car repair business since the 60s and the 70s. So Brian and Thelma have been around car people their whole lives. So Thompson's Auto Repair is on Main Street just east of Stapley. He knows what's right or wrong. He abides by whatever estimate he gave you, and he's real interested in keeping you as a customer. So he does all the right things. So here's my promise. All you have to do is meet Brian or Thelma, and you'll understand completely why they're on my list, because they are really the salt of the earth. They're really good people. And I think I had a customer one time with Thompson's that had indicated that he was confused about what happened. So I called Brian, and I said, this is his confusion. Would you call him back? And he said, yes. And then I followed up and said, How did we do? And he says, no, to my complete satisfaction. I just didn't understand this one thing. And Brian explained it to me, and he says, everything's fine. I said, perfect. So it works like that. But I only really get involved in those kinds of things maybe once a year, maybe. So I'm really proud of the best car repair shops list we have. It's really difficult to get on the car repair list because you have to have 5 years in your present location. You have to have a good, clean record. Your reviews have to be better than the average. You have to have liability insurance and workman's comp insurance. You have to have unemployment insurance. You have to have, and workman's comp is important. And then you have to have garage liability, which means that the shop is responsible for the cars that are in their care, custody, and control. That way, if the place burns down, there is insurance to pay for your car. That's how it works. Okay, we've got our first caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Patrick.
Patrick, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Marky Mark, how's your day?
You know, so far so good, but I'll let you know later on this afternoon.
but there's room for deceleration.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is.
Hey, so I got a 78 Chevy C10, and crazy thing is I grew up loving Dodges and Fords, and then I drove this thing, and it floats, and I can't get rid of it.
Okay.
The brass cooler in, or the brass radiator in it just is not getting it done with the stock fan. It's got a 350 board 60 over, and it so it runs really hot. And I had the radiator rotted and everything, and it helped a little bit, but it's not good enough. So what I'm doing is putting an aluminum radiator in there with big, they look like 17-inch fans on here, 19-inch. I don't know. They're huge. My question is, the core on this thing is only 18 inches. And the on the stock one, it's 18 and, like, just under a half. I can't find anybody, and this might not be the direction that you know, because it's not normally that I listen all the time and normally do newer stuff and send people to shops and stuff. I can't find anybody that's done this that can say, oh yes, you want to put those bushings from that year in there to take up that space, or you want to do.
Okay, stop. Use Are you talking about the space in front of the radiator, or behind the radiator, on the engine side, or the grill side?
Above and below. So because it's the height.
Okay.
The height is a half inch too short.
Okay, so I'm not worried about the height or the width, as long as it's something close to the one you put in. But I think you're making a big mistake. I've done that a lot of times. I did it on my 76 Chevy pickup. It's never worked. It doesn't work. Let's start back at the beginning. When you say it runs really hot, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, it runs like 190 running down the freeway, but when you're idling in traffic, there's just not enough fan movement and whatnot. So it's running 210, 220.
Okay.
And I can't even run the AC because it'll just shoot right up.
Okay, well, you've just thrown a whole bunch of bull on my desk. First of all, 190 to 220 is a normal temperature. So I don't know what you're trying to fix, but 190 to 210 is a normal temperature. Perhaps you come from the 180 group, but that 180 group came from the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. We don't do that anymore. The engine will last a lot longer. Everything will be better if you run that thing between 190 and 220. Now, if it's running down the freeway at 190, then that means we got good airflow across the radiator. There's no two ways about it. So having a bigger, taller, or wider, we're running. Around town, if it's between between 220 and 230, so what? You're going to go to 260 to 280 before you cook the motor. We got a lot of room. But no, I don't want to bust your bubble. Those electric cooling fans won't work. You're not going to be able to control them real well. You're going to put this little sensor in the upper radiator hose, and then it's going to try to turn the coolers or the fans on and off. It's not going to work. We're not blowing enough air. You don't have a shroud on there. That's not going to work.
It's got a shroud.
Okay. You're going to use that shroud with one fan? Or I thought you said you had two fans.
No, it's two fans. It's two fans.
Okay. There's no shroud on the two fan. It just bolts to the backside of the radiator. I'm talking about the shroud that came with the vehicle. That's that big. It necks down from the entire radiator to the size of the fan. And when the fan runs, it pulls air through the radiator and not through the sides. So, you know, you asked me my opinion, and I'm telling you, I think, and first of all, aluminum radiators are made for electric fans, and the electric fans on the cars today are quite different than the electric fans you're likely to be putting in there. You're either going to control that electric fan or not. As far as the air conditioning is concerned, I'd probably wire it to when I turn on the air, I turn on the fans. So if you want to do that, that's fine. We need to run the fans pretty much all the time if we're going to have air, because I need airflow across that condenser. But again, without right. you being able to control the suck the portion of those two fans, you're not going to draw. You're not going to draw as much air across the condenser as you may need. So, but on the other hand, if the air's shutting down, then the question is if the air stops working, is it city or highway? Because when you're on the highway,
no, I have to turn it off. I have to turn it off because it runs up to 250, 260 on per temp.
Well, then you have something wrong with more, because all we're doing is the condenser is just dissipating its heat in the air. So if you're running 250, 260, then you have a problem. A problem that the fans, your idea is not going to work. I started doing this in 1976. I took my Chevy pickup and I thought I was smarter than the average bear. And I can't tell you what we did. We built shrouds. We shrouded off around the fans. We controlled the fan all the time, or we let the controller turn on the fan all the time. We did everything imaginable and I couldn't keep that thing from running 230, 240 all the time. So let me explain why it's important for you to understand that I wanted to run at 220. Your old truck, it used to run at 180. Every time you shut it off, we're going to get a tablespoon of water in the condensation. Your water's going to turn to mud in the oil. It's going to turn to a white foam. But you don't see that on the dipstick, but it's there. So the water sits down at the bottom. The oil floats to the top. So the only way then, and your motor and your truck and my 76 Chevy pickup, the motors didn't last 100,000 miles when you took the intake manifold off. There was 2 inches of sludge in there, so the oil pan was the same way. We thought sludge was Pennzoil. We thought sludge was Valvoline. We thought sludge was the oil itself, or the filter was bad. That's what we thought, but it's not true. It's water. And that's what makes sludge. So when we move it up to 220, we already know that water boils at 212. So we move it up to 220 operating, then the motor turns the water to steam. The PCV valve pulls the steam out and sends it out the tailpipe. That's why cars today are running 300,000 and 400,000 and 500,000 miles. So now we know how to handle the oil. It was never the oil. It was the temperature we were running the engines at. So there's no harm in foul. If your Chevy burps and doesn't like 220, you got a bigger problem than two fans are going to take care of. That's all there is to it. But anyway, you bring up a good point. You can take my advice or you can toss it and put your fans on. But I just want to caution you, that aluminum radiator, you think that that's going to make a big difference, and it's not. It may not even be as thick as the three-row that car probably came with. So, and you're not likely to get a three-row aluminum, because I don't know that I've seen a three-row aluminum. So, anyway, good luck to you. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Alrighty. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and you're welcome to give us a call, and we'll talk about car repair. The give and take is important. How hot does it run, and what are you trying to accomplish, and all that kind of stuff. So that's 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm going to get to the two callers real quick. We've got three open lines, 602-508-0960. Kurt's Auto Repair is up at I-17 and Bell, the northeast corner. Kurt, Jeff, and Eric are the three predominant people there. They're all master technicians. Kurt's an older guy like me, kind of gray-haired, been around the block more than once. Eric and Jeff are... they are young men who think they know as much as the old guys. I can't remember what that saying is. Young bucks, I guess? So Kurt and I always have a lot of fun with Eric and Jeff, just because it's a matter of pride to see who knows the most about cars, and those young bucks think they do, and they never do. So if you're up there anywhere near I-17 and Bell, and you don't have a repair shop, may I suggest you try Kurt's northeast corner of Bell and I-17. All righty, Larry, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi. I have a 2002 Explorer Sport Track. It's got a 4-liter V6 in it.
Okay.
A while back, it started when I shut the engine off and get out of the vehicle. If I walk by the engine, I could smell antifreeze. Didn't smell in the cab or anything, so I don't think it's the
heater core.
Heater core. But I noticed that little search tank where you put all, where you add antifreeze, had a crack. I had it replaced. Didn't solve the problem. I don't think I'm leaking any antifreeze anywhere, but I got that smell for a while. Could I have a head gasket problem?
No, because you didn't say the key points of a head gasket problem. So
that'd be leakage, right?
Well, not necessarily. Here's the deal. You know that the motor has four cycles. That's why it's called a four-cycle engine. Mm-hmm. It's got suck, compress, bang, exhaust. Okay? So what
it's
happens if you...
It's intake, compression,
yeah.
Fire, exhaust when I was
yep.
a kid. Yeah.
Well, the bang, it's the new way of saying bang and, you know, power and stuff. Okay. When you got a head gasket problem on the suction stroke, on the intake stroke, it'll suck water into that cylinder. It'll create an engine miss. So that's one of the most predominant things we have.
Okay.
And you didn't say anything about that.
Nope,
and you didn't
fine.
Say anything. Okay. And it also, if it's a water into the oil, you'll see white foam all over the dipstick. You didn't say anything about that.
Nope.
Okay. So let's talk about where we're at here. When the engine gets hot and it overcomes the pressure on the cap, and let's say it's a 16-pound cap, it gets up to 17, the cap will vent that into the overflow jug. That's all there is to it. Now, when you shut it off at night, as the engine cools down, there's a little valve on the cap that opens up, and you suck fluid from the overflow back into the engine till it's full. So we have this transition of coolant. Hot, we go into the overflow, and after you park it, we come back. Now, I think you ought to put a radiator cap on it, and I think you ought to look for a Stant brand. I don't care what you buy, but I like Stant. So
Stant, okay.
I'd put a radiator cap on it. This is what I do. Fill the overflow jug with water. Okay, just water. And it will find its own level. Now, on your jug, it's going to say minimum and maximum, or it'll say cold and hot.
All the way across, yep.
Okay. Obviously, the hot one's higher because we're exhausting fluid from the cooling system into the overflow so that it goes up to the hot mark, let's pretend. Now, at night, when we start sucking water out of the overflow jug to fill the car back up, the engine back up, then obviously there's a cold mark. Now, those are not going to be precise. And frankly, if you can put up with me, I would say fill the doggone thing up and let it find its own balance.
Level, okay.
That's it. And you got to make sure that it is coming from the overflow, and you have to make sure of the integrity of the overflow. So the nipple's not cracked, the bucket itself, the jug itself is okay, but if you had a head gasket, it would be throwing coolant every time, and you would have an engine miss somewhere along the line, and you may have some white stuff coming out of your dipstick tube, and you have a constant need of water because the engine's consuming water, so it's not going to really throw it out on the ground. It's actually not. It's going to consume water, and it's going to empty the jug after two or three nights.
Okay.
So
that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Well, the smell is just coming out of that radiator cap when it's venting, then when I shut it off.
Yeah, and I'm thinking there's a 75% chance all you need is a new radiator cap, because when you shut it off, obviously the water stops flowing, right?
Yep.
So because it's not flowing, it gathers a whole bunch more heat. The water stopped and the engine's hot. So as we do that, we expand that water, and that's when we overcome the spring on the cap and throw some stuff into the overflow. So what you're seeing on the ground could very well be a cap, and I'm willing to say that 75% of the time it is, and if I fix it, the next time the plate passes you, you add an extra dollar or two. 10-4?
10-4, I got it.
All right.
That's an easy fix. I was just hoping I wouldn't have something wrong with that, you know, manifold leaking or something.
I understand.
Something simple.
If the intake manifold's leaking, almost always we have water in the oil.
Okay,
so now, fair. If you do have a head gasket blown up and you end up with that miss, then I want you to call me back, and I will tell you how to fix that with some additive that's okay. been working for us 95% of the time.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, we'll do that.
All right. Thank you very much. Richard, can I help you? Or how can I help you?
Yes. I got a 2016 Kia 4-cylinder. I bought it used about 35,000 miles. I changed the oil at 40,000. I changed it again at 55,000. Didn't consume any oil. And at 5,000 miles, I'm a quart low. I put another quart in, and I don't know how many miles I've driven. It's down 3/4 now. I went to Kia, and this is the story they told me. They've changed something with a knock sensor. Does that make any sense to you?
Uh-huh.
and that's what's causing the oil consumption.
Okay.
That kind of sounded crazy to me.
I'm not familiar with that, and at first blush, the knock sensor simply determines that there's a vibration in the engine that's caused by a pre-ignition or a ping. So the knock sensor raises its hands and tells the ECM, hey, back off the timing a little bit. So the ECM backs off 1 degree, and the knock sensor says, I need more. And the ECM backs off 2 degrees, and then it says to the knock sensor, how you doing now? And the knock sensor says, no problem. That happens about 30 to 100 times a second. So to test a knock sensor, all you do is you look at your scanner and you hit the alternator bracket with a hammer. That's all. You want to see that the knock sensor comes alive.
They told me when it gets to consuming a quart and 800 miles, they will change the engine.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question that I'm confused about. You said you bought it at 40, or I thought you said you bought it at 40 and you changed the oil at 55.
No. I bought it at 35. I changed it at 40. I use synthetics, so I changed it at 55, and at 6,000, I was one quart low.
Okay.
But the first 15,000 miles, there was no consumption.
Okay. So all of a sudden, you've had this consumption. Well, in order to track down a consumption problem, I'll tell you how we track down, but I'm going to put you on hold because I only got 29 seconds to go. But I'm going to come back to you, and you stay right there. Anybody else, there's four lines open, 602-508-0960. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what does a seasoned technician look for an oil consumption problem? What does he do to identify where it's going? And in reality, that's going to cost you somewhere between $100 and $200 to find that out. Unless, of course, they do it at the very beginning, and that's not likely. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're here talking about cars. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you want to talk about cars, that's the number you use. Give me year, make, and model and mileage, and tell me what the symptoms are, and we're going to talk about it. We're going to quickly go back to Richard so I can finish him up. Richard, are you there?
I'm there.
Okay. The first thing that we do is pull the spark plugs, and we're looking for a discoloration of one versus the other. That will typically tell us where the oil consumption's at, but we could have oil leaking into the cooling system, and you're going to pull the radiator, or not the radiator cap, but the oil cap, and look at the bottom of it, and if it's white and foamy, then you got water leaking into the motor. Number two, sometimes we'll send it out the tailpipe, but in addition to that, we'll have a coolant loss. So we want to look for that. We want to look for that the coolant isn't matching the oil consumption. So we got a coolant consumption and an oil consumption, and that typically means a head gasket or something like that. So here's my advice to you. Did you use the oil that says that the engine calls for on the cap?
Yes.
Okay, it was a 020, right?
It was 520.
520, okay, that's a synthetic. So you did right. So what they're going to want from you is an oil consumption test. So what you're going to do is you're going to bring it up to the full mark, even if you had to have to add a half a cup at a time, put it on the full mark, and then write down the mileage. And usually I tell them, take a picture of the mileage with the date on it. It'll have the date and time on it, but just take a picture of it. Now, you're going to check it continuously until it hits the add mark. It has to hit the add mark, not above it, because the add mark is one quart low. So when it does, take a picture of the dipstick, take a picture of your mileage. Put it on some kind of a chart. And when you walk in there and you hand them that and say, here is five different quarts I've added, and here's the mileage spread, and I don't have any engine misses, which means I don't have a head gasket, and which means one of the spark plugs isn't fouled. So they're going to have to go in there and see the spark plugs. Once they see the spark plugs, they're going to do a compression test on all four, and they're going to do a dry compression test on, let's say, number three is shown black on the spark plug.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do a dry, and then they'll put some oil in the cylinder to seal the rings, and then they'll do a wet. And if it's the rings or the cylinder walls, then we're typically going to replace the engine. Most of us have cameras that we can drop down in there and look. So we're looking for scored cylinder walls. We're looking for the top of the piston having a tremendous amount of carbon on it. When the cylinders on either side of it don't have that. So that means that cylinder's consuming oil. But don't think for a minute that this is going to be something quick, because the next time you go in, they're going to ask for this oil consumption test.
Right. And he talked to me about that.
Yeah.
And he just said, when it gets to a point at a quarter to 800 miles, they just change the engine.
Okay. But if you
they said they changed something in the NOx sensor and this has caused the problem, but I haven't had it in there for any, you know.
Okay.
They haven't seen the car.
I don't understand the relation. I've been wrong before.
No, I know.
I'm
not
on a leading edge.
It sounded kind of goofy to me.
Yeah, I don't know where the NOx sensor comes in. At time you, the car pings a lot, and no matter what gas I put in it, and then you go in and hit the hammer on the alternator bracket, and the NOx sensor doesn't say, hey, and raise its hand. You replace it, and then it says, hey, and it raises its hand, and you're done. So
now I got to that oil's pretty expensive. Can I go to more NX520? No.
I want you to use what it says on the cap.
Right.
The fuel economy. I don't know. You're changing it what, every 15,000 miles?
Right.
Okay. You should. And right. I would change it between 12 and 15.
The fuel economy is just the same. It runs fine. There's no check engine lights.
Okay.
The coolant, there's no loss of coolant.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd keep the 530, and I would probably change it somewhere between 12 and 15,000. And under the best of conditions, at the 12 mark, maybe you're a quart low, but that's normal. Or maybe you're a quart and a half low. That's normal. I mean, really and truly, 12,000 miles is halfway around the girth of the Earth, because it's a 25,000-mile equator. So we can't have our expectations too high, but you could very well be one of those people that can go 12,000 and not drop below the ad mark. My wife's car's like that. So, all righty. Well, I got to run, but Richard, good luck to you. And Greg, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I'm sorry. I have a 1970 Dodge Challenger with an automatic transmission, and my problem is it's leaking transmission fluid out of the front. You know, by the torque converter, you can see it's running down the inspection plate, then running back, you know, across the pan on the transmission pan. At first, I thought it was the transmission pan, so I replaced the gasket. But now, it's actually gotten a lot worse now. Now, if I just start the car and park the car, I don't know if the fluid is running out of the torque converter and coming out of the seal, the front seal on the transmission.
Okay. Well, no one's going to know that until they take it apart. You're going to have to take it apart. The tranny's got to come out. But there's a lot of us that'll take the inspection plate off and use a mirror. There's a lot of us that'll put a little dye in it, and we'll put some dye in it that makes it look fluorescent yellow or fluorescent orange or whatever. And then we'll start it up and drive it for 10, 15 minutes, bring it back in. And usually the fluorescent oil will lead us right to the place. But it's not going to be a torque converter leaking, because that would be spraying oil all over creation. It's probably the front seal. So what you're going to want to do is you're going to want your shop to just pull it and reseal the whole thing, because there's nothing else wrong with it. So they got
to pull it anyway.
So they're going to replace the front seal, the back seal, the shift lever seal, the governor cover housing if it's got one. They're just going to reseal the whole thing, front to back, left to right. That's what I would do. All righty.
Okay. One more question.
Okay.
A transmission shop in the surprise area, is there one you would recommend?
There's a lot of guys that won't take this. There's a lot of guys that say, I don't want to open this thing up. It's a 1970.
Right.
I'd probably contact Thunderbird up there in 88th Avenue in Thunderbird and ask those guys if they want to try it, A, and if not, who's a good local transmission shop that they would use to do this. This is not going to, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is only a 5 or a 6. The problem is the risk is huge. So if you're going to replace all the seals, there is a risk that one of them is going to leak, and you're going to have to do it all over again, and you better pray it's not the front seal, which means R&R the tranny. So there's a little risk and reward there. But if not, you might call Alger at ANS Transmissions, automatic and standard transmission. He's booked to the gills. He's a wholesale shop. Every once in a while, he'll take a retail in. You tell him you have a 70 Challenger, he might set you an appointment. But it could take you a month to get in there. So call Alger at ANS Transmission, see if he'll take you. And tell him tell him you have naked pictures of Mark Salem, and he'll laugh, and then he'll know I recommended you. But I don't make any money on recommendations. It's just a funny way, because he says, why do you tell people to say that? And I says, because it's just funny. Or I'll say to him, Mark said he used to date your mother. Or Mark said he used to be married to your wife. Or whatever. It's just that kind of thing. And it elicits a laugh just like yours. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to be back taking your calls. Forty-five minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we have another hour of car talk, car repair talk, or whatever. Under the hood with Mark Salem is the correct way to think about it. But I want to go back real quick before I take Hector. Greg, on your 70 Challenger, when you said surprise, I focused on surprise. I want to give you another transmission shop that's in the retail business. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil's been around since Jesus and the cart with wood wheels. He knows your transmission like very few other people do. He's been in business at the same location, 40th Street in Washington, since 1968. They've gone to the next level in providing excellent services because they have a transmission dynamometer. In your case, you're not going to need it. But Phil, I can promise you, if he's done 100, he's done 200, pulling out that transmission. I think your Chrysler transmission's a 727, but I've been wrong before. And pulling it out, resealing it, putting it back in. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. He's well worth the drive. Hector, good morning. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. How you doing? My parents have a 95 Mercedes C280. They asked, well, my father asked me to change the fuel pump. I guess it wouldn't start or whatnot. Went down there, had the fuel pump, not the fuel filter. When I looked under there, it was the original fuel filter also. Changed the fuel pump. Now, when they start it, it starts, and then it'll die. And then they try to start it again and just crank it like it wants to, but it won't get started. So I'm kind of hoping you'd give me some ideas before I change the filter on Monday.
No, you have to change the filter. You have to change the filter first. If their filter's restricted, it's going to restrict the flow towards the motor.
Okay.
And you have to do that. I wish you had done that first before the fuel pump.
Yeah.
It's okay. No, it's okay. And let me explain. The O2 sensor, when it goes lean, it's screaming to the computer, open the faucet. So everybody replaces the O2 sensors. That's because the three-whiskered kid down at the AutoZone or the three-whiskered kid at any auto parts store tells them that's what it needs. In fact, 50% mm-hmm. of the time, the fuel filter's plugged up, and it's restricting the flow of fuel to the engine, and the engine's interpreting that as a lean condition. But in reality, all you do is change the fuel filter, and you're done. So in your particular case, I really think you should do the filter, and I think that will cure your problem. If not, you're going to have to call Goody at a Mercedes shop up in Scottsdale and ask Goody if he can wave his magic wand, and he'll probably be able to fix this with no problem. All righty?
Well, hopefully your fairy dust will fix it Monday.
Okay. All righty. Well, good luck to you, Hector. Bye. Good luck to you. Jay, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
By the way, I used to own a 70 Challenger RT convertible. That's worth a lot of money today, and I wish I still had it.
It was
in 1972, I was only 2 years old, and that was a sweet ride.
All of us have those same feelings. All of us. Okay, yeah. go ahead.
So, I have... my brother owns a 2011 Kia Sorento. It's got the electronic starter on it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a key switch, just a push button.
Right.
And it's caused them trouble off and on since they've had the car. And at this point, the fob itself is becoming very unpredictable. The it had a battery leakage in it at one time, and I cleaned it up, and it works kind of off and on, but the only thing that seems to really work consistently is supposed to be able to carry it in your pocket, and it'll sense it when you're like 5 feet away from the car. That doesn't work anymore. But if it's got a socket inside of the cubby hole that's got a receiver for the key fob itself, and you push it down in there, and it clicks in place, and then that is supposed to override that sensor function.
Okay.
And you can start the car, then it'll tell you the key is in the car.
Okay, okay, all right, okay.
His question is, his wife is worried that that also is an electronic device that could fail, and my brother is wondering if this is more of a manual start function on that, or if it's also electronic. In other words,
okay, no, it's electronic, and it's just like waving your credit card across, you know, the little window and stuff like that. It's electronic.
Really?
Okay, let's back way up, way up. It's entirely possible that your Kia just needs a reflash. We just need to go into the security system and, you know, check the software and maybe update the software if there's an update. That's number one. When number two, we got to check the battery, and if not, we replace the battery in the fob. Okay, that's always the default.
Yeah,
just replace the battery.
It's been replaced recently.
And then two, we also have, like you talked about, we have sensors that are supposed to do that. You have to go to the owner's manual. You have to read the owner's manual because every car is different. Some of them want you to wave a dead chicken over your head and quack like a duck. The other people, you'll walk up and nothing happens, but there's a keypad behind the handle. And as soon as you touch that, boom, the door opens up. You get inside, push your start button, and you're off. So we need to do that. Last but not least, the electronic part that's the bypass. We don't have any statistics on that because it's used so very little. But I would have no problem putting my wife in that car and having her drive it for a month and thinking that she's going to get stuck. So we're going to Plan B, and Plan B is used so little that I don't have a clue if Plan B works 50% of the time, but I can tell you this much. I've never had anybody come in and tell me that Plan B didn't work. And many people have used Plan B to get their car unlocked. So tell your sister-in-law that Mark says that it shouldn't be bad. Tell your brother-in-law that taking it might have somebody check the software and reflash the security system software and make sure the battery's good, and then you can go from there. Okay?
Exactly.
All righty. Thank you very much. Tony, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey there, Mark. I know you're a diesel aficionado because of the trucks, the big trucks you drive.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, diesel, number one in my book. What's going on today with the cheap gas, 87 octane, and it has the, you know, the 10% ethanol that's in there? I mean, why should we be even buying this stuff?
Because the
tailpipe
emissions
to the engines.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. Everybody blames it on the ethanol. There are a lot of good points. The answer to your question is the tailpipe's a lot cleaner. That's the answer. And the ethanol also absorbs water in the fuel system. And that's a good idea. And there is no ethanol or alcohol in any other brand of gas. So you're getting two things. There is nothing wrong. So hear me. Let me change your question, my question. Mark, what kind of damage have you seen, and how much money has people spent at your facility because of ethanol-based fuels? And the answer is zero. Zero what I've seen, and zero that we've seen that as being a direct relation. Now, there's lots of people out there that complain that ethanol makes their cars do this, this, and this, but I am convinced that they've misdiagnosed it, or they let somebody on YouTube diagnose it for them, and they said, oh, it's the ethanol. It's just not true. It's just not true. So it's an opportunity for you to have something that's still combustible, but when you blow up alcohol, your emissions are a lot cleaner. And it absorbs water in your fuel system. So, no, Tony, I don't agree with people who say that ethanol is bad. And I'm not quite sure 10 is it. I've seen some fives. I don't really pay attention to it. But, I mean, my wife used the cheapest gas she can find, and I don't have any problem. We see cars come into our facility with 200,000, 300,000, and 400,000 miles that are ethanol-based, 87-octane, get the cheapest gas you can and put it in this car. And we're not seeing anything that's related to ethanol. But there'll be somebody that'll call in and say something, and we'll talk about it. But no, the ethanol is fine, and it is good for our environment. And I'm a cowboy who rides a horse, and the only gas I know when I'm on the horse is what comes out underneath his tail, and that's probably dirtier air than a car with ethanol. I'll probably get in trouble for that one. Okay, thank you very much, Tony. Jeff, you're up next.
He dropped, so we're going to go to Tom.
Okay. Tom, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah. Mark, I've been listening for years and years and enjoy your show.
Thank you.
And this relates back to your first caller about the radiator.
Yes.
And you said, make a long story. I have a 67 big block Corvette that I put on the road 9 years ago, and I actually bought a 4-row aluminum radiator for it. They make three. They make a 2, 3, and 4, this one company.
Yeah.
And it has factory air. It has the clutch and the radiator shroud and everything else, and never overheats. So
okay.
It's just some information. They do make a 3-row, and they actually make a 4-row, and that's what I've been having in my car the last 9 years, and it works perfect.
Okay. All right. Well, let me just explain to everybody else. First of all, the aluminum is a step up from what your brass one was, so it dissipates heat much better and much faster. Now, you said you put everything stock back in, so you got the shroud and you got the fan clutch and all that kind of stuff. So you did exactly what I would have done. Now, I need to explain what you're talking about here, but before I do that, let me just tell you real quick about Blackwell Automotive. He's at 40th and Greenway. I've known Tom for 22, 25 years. I don't really like Tom that much because him and I argue about cars all the time, and he doesn't know what I know.
I hear you say that all the time.
I'm kidding, of course. Blackwell's a good guy. Again, he's at 40th Street and Greenway. He's on the northwest corner. He's been around a long time, and he is one of those guys that you can go in and throw the gauntlet down, and you'll see him get his back up. Nobody can fix my car, and I've told that you can, but I doubt you can. Well, that'll get his
2 minutes
tail end fired up. Okay, on your folks, the water comes out of the upper hose and goes into the radiator. His radiator has two vertical tanks on the end. So those tanks fill up, and we have these tubes that travel from the passenger side over to the driver's side. And obviously, if you're pushing coolant and we only have one tube, then the coolant's going to go through that one tube pretty fast because of the pressure behind it, which is 14, 16 pounds. Now, it's like having a freeway with one lane during rush hour. It's going to be plugged up, but if we have four lanes, then everybody's moving a lot smoother. Well, we don't want the water to go through the radiator so fast it doesn't have time to drop the heat off. So if we have four highways in there and we put everything in the passenger side of the radiator from the top hose, because the top pushes and the bottom sucks, so we put water in, and the water kind of lazily goes through the radiator because there's lots of tubes. He has a 4-row, that's called tubes. Then everything's fine. So a 1-row versus a 4-row, the 4-row is more efficient, will handle the dissemination of heat much better than a 1-row, and the 4-row is going to give him high-speed performance, where a 1-row or a 2-row is going to cause an increased heat on the engine, because the faster you go, the more the water pump turns. And so the water pump is pressurized in that tank, and we're running water through at 200 miles an hour. So that's how it works. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, then we talk about the year, make, and model, the mileage, and then we talk about the symptoms. So that's the very best and most efficient way. And like you've just seen on the show this hour, and we've got another hour after this break, it's a real easy thing to come up with. So 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. We'll be back in about 4 minutes. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. The lines are wide open, so if you have a car question you want to argue with me, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil is the one that answers the phone. You don't want to make him mad because he has these fingers that shake. So if you make him mad, when he goes to put you on hold, something happens and you just disappear. So Gil says hello, and you
something
can give
happens.
Us a call. 602-315-4321. Larry Harker's Auto has been around since 1967. Consider that in 1967, I was about 11 years old. And so they've been around a long time. Bob and Ellen own and operate Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue in Indian School. He's one of the best diagnosticians that I've ever met in my life, and I dare say that he's probably better than I am in the diag mode. He is really, really good. And what's really good about him is you can throw the gauntlet down in front of him and say, oh, nobody can fix this. And that'll make him work twice as hard. So if you're up in the 38th Avenue and Indian School Road and you're looking for a place to do oil changes, then Larry Harker's a good guy to do all the maintenance on your car. But if you've got one of those cars that intermittently the horn honks and at the same time the radio goes dead, Bob at Larry Harker's Auto can take care of it. All righty, folks, I'm wrong every once in a while, but there's a certain amount of guys that have my cell phone number, and they're not shy about raising their hand and calling me an idiot. Alger called because we had the guy with the 70 Challenger that has a transmission leak, and I said it had a 727 transmission, or at least I thought it did. Alger said it could be a 727 or it could be a 904. Alger, how much would you charge to reseal that transmission on the 70 Challenger? He said it's between $500 and $600. I said, well, how much is an overhaul? And he goes between $1,100 and $1,400, depending on what it needs inside. I said, what's the success rate on the reseal? He goes, it depends on where the leak is at. But he says most of the time we can stop them from leaking and do a good job. So Alger's at A&S Transmission. He typically does wholesale work, but he'll take in a retail car every once in a while, so you're going to have to wait your turn, and sometimes it's a long wait. So I was right about the 727, but he said it could be a 904 as well, and he gave me some numbers that help you. Now, Goody called me last week, and here was the call about. We have cars today, folks, that when you pull up to a traffic light, the engine dies. And then when you go to hit the gas, then the engine fires up and you drive away. It has nothing to do with the driver. You don't have to do anything. You apply your brakes, you come to a stop. The engine's dead. And it's a fuel economy thing. So then you get ready to go and you touch the accelerator and it just goes. Well, I had said, and the caller had said, that, you know, how much wear and tear is on the starter. There are some that have starters on them. But Goody brought up a good point that the computer knows which cylinder has a charge of gas in it. And the computer knows that all it has to do is spark that gas, and then all of a sudden that engine will run. So that's true. That's very, very true. It's a very sophisticated way, and it's kind of hard to figure it out. But let's say you have a V8 motor, and the firing order is 18651 184-3-6-5-7-2, something like that. Anyway, it's eight numbers in a row. 18431-6572. So if you go to 6 and 5 is after it, it knows that 6 has a full charge. The last thing it did is suck fuel into that cylinder, but the spark plug never ignited it. So when we stop, as soon as I touch the gas, the computer goes, send spark to number 5. Number 5, and the next one fires up. So the engine just kind of starts up because the computer is going to send spark to a cylinder that's charged with fuel. So usually on direct ignition, that's what happens. So he's right. That happens, so there really isn't a starter motor involved with those of you. Many of you, the majority of you, are going to have either a starter or the computer's going to fire the motor up knowing exactly. And it does it with the crank and camshaft sensor. So the computer knows exactly where the engine's at every time you shut it off, every time it dies. And to make it die, we just shut the fuel off temporarily. Or we shut the spark off temporarily. Or we whatever. But we just kill the engine. So there's plenty of guys that have my cell phone number. And if I do something wrong, they're more than willing to let me know. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. My email address, if you want to use that sometime, is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. Folks, I have a repair shop. It's an operating repair shop, but where it is and what we do is insignificant to the show. I'm going to send you to the place that's best suited geographically and for your car. So that's the reason why I don't thump my chest and tell all of you to come to my shop, because that's not what this show is all about. 602-508-0960. Let me tell you a story, and it's a true story. Back in 1988, I had called into a radio station, and I said, there was a guy on there that was talking about cars, and yeah, I think you could do a better job. And the lady said, you think you can do a better job? And I said, yes, ma'am. And she says, well, come in next Saturday. And that's how I got on radio. Now, my mom was an executive for the likes of Phelps Dodge, and mom was a real businesslike woman. who's passed in 2005. So after I'd been on the radio 2 or 3 months or so, Mom calls me and she says, on your radio, I've been listening to you, and you sound like S-H-I-T. And I said, well, thanks. You know, that's what I needed to hear. And she said, yeah, you just need to redo what you say. And I said, well, tell me what I need to redo. She says, you need to stop thumping your chest and telling everybody how great your shop is. She says, why don't you put the caller's interests in front of your own? She says, don't you have any friends in this city? And I said, yeah, I do, Mom. I got friends all over the city. She says, are they worthy of your recommendation? Yes, Mother, they're worthy of my recommendation. Well, why don't you send somebody? She said, you used to send everybody to 43rd and Bethany Home Road, Bruce Automotive. I said, yeah, Bruce is a good, he's not there anymore, by the way, folks. But Bruce was a great guy, and he knew how to fix cars. She says, well, you need to start sending people to a shop that's closer to them. People from Surprise and Fountain Hills and Desert Ridge are not going to drive all the way to South Tempe to go to your shop. Besides that, it just sounds real self-serving. And I got to go. So she hung up before I could really say anything that I wanted to say. But that's exactly where that got started. So from the early 90s, I've never said the name of my show or my shop, except every once in a while somebody will say, I'm from Ahwatukee, I'm from South Tempe, and I'll say, do you have any other shop? And they say no. And I say, okay, well, I appear to be the closest shop, da, 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 da. And that's how it works. So I'm not here to thump my chest. My mother made sure of that. I'm not here to have you come to my shop. I'm here to direct you to the very best shop in town. And if it's in your geographical area, then I'll do my best to do that. Speaking of good shops, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop, and he's staffed by some of the best diesel techs that are around. They are dedicated to providing best service, and they get the job done right the first time. They also are die-hard diesel service, repair, and parts guys. They work on foreign, domestic, light diesel trucks. That's important, light diesel trucks. So Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Mercedes, of the vintage, you know, that has a diesel truck in the light truck division. So this isn't a big truck place. They're located at south of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in North Scottsdale. They're open Monday through Friday, but they also sell parts 24 hours a day on their website. So you can stop by Strictly Diesel Service and Repair website, and you can look to see what kind of cold air kits they have, or what kind of this, or what kind of injectors they have, that kind of stuff. They're a good place for that. 602-508-0960. We don't have anybody calling in. Gil? Are you there, Gil? Oh, boy.
Yes, Mark, go ahead.
Oh! Whew. Do we have anybody calling in?
Oh, the lines are open.
Oh, the lines are open. Gil says the lines are open. 602-508-0960. It's getting kind of lonesome around here, Gil. 602-508-0960. Okay, here comes a car story. Lady comes into the shop the other day. And she's having a tough time with a language barrier. And we have my daughter and my son at the front counter. And they're asking her questions. And they understand she's very, very fragile, frazzled. So they're thinking maybe she has an overheat, or maybe her has a flat tire and stuff. So they walk out and they look at her car and everything looks fine. So finally the lady says, meow. So they quiet down. And they can hear meows coming from the car. So they look underneath, and there's no cat. So they drive around to the bay. They lift up in the air, and there's a big panel called a splash shield underneath the transmission. So they take all the bolts out, drop it down in the panel, and there's three kittens in the panel. So at this particular point, the entire shop is over there looking at these three kittens. And, of course, and these kittens couldn't have been 24 hours old. I mean, they were brand new. Of course, I'm not a veterinarian, but I just tell you, everybody there thought they were born in the last 10 minutes, but we're going to say in the last 24 hours. So anyway, our staff was bidden for the animals. My daughter, who runs the operation, said, no, we're not taking the cats. You're not taking the cats. And she says to the lady, you know, can you take them back to where you work? She said, I work across the street at Honeywell. And she says, well, and I guess we did get through that, but she puts them back in a box in the car, and she says, well, maybe the mother's there, and if not, take it home. So anyway, the language barrier, we were able to overcome that. And this is what I said to my daughter. This is what I was concerned about. So this just gives you how Mark, how sick Mark thinks. I talked to Andy and I said, okay, what happened next? And da-da-da. That's great. She says, okay. She says, any other questions? And I said, yeah, did you charge her? And there's this long silence. And she goes, would you have wanted me to charge her? And I said, I'm hoping you said no. I'm hoping you didn't charge your rack fee or anything. And then he goes, we didn't. She says, I got this, Dad. And I said, okay. I just wanted to know if you charged her. I'm really proud that you didn't charge her. Okay, who's on the phone? We can just say hi, and then we're going to take a break.
Al.
Al, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi there, young man.
Hi there.
I've been trying to get a hold of you for about 3 or 4 weeks with this, but I'll make it quick.
Okay.
There was an article in the Republic, the cars section, and it's dated January 20th. You might want to take a quick look at it, but it's about one of your favorite subjects, car warranties.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to read one short paragraph about it.
Okay, now we're going to hold on to you until after the break because I'm 20 seconds away from my 17 mark. So that's okay. We're going to do this, and then we're going to talk about all the news coverage down in Maricopa where that unlucky Circle K had a bunch of water in the gas and what the news coverage said that had me leap out of my chair and use bad words. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in 3. So we're back now, and let me just do some real quick business. Action Auto Repair is at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom owns Action Auto Repair. Tom's a good guy. He's a friend of mine. We have the same thought process about everything except raising kids, and that has nothing to do with car repair. So he's been around, and in that particular, the Deer Valley area, since 1983. So he does everything from oil changes to engine swaps. He does everything from oil leaks to air conditioning systems and everything in between. And he has a master BMW technician. So if you have a BMW and you want an alternative to the shop you're probably at, then Action Auto on the northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley is a good place to go. Okay, we're going to go back to Al. Al, you were going to read a section out of the newspaper. Go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, the title of the article was How to Cancel an Extended Car Warranty.
Okay.
And it was dated January 20th. Thought it might interest you. But anyway, this one short paragraph. Consumer Reports calling extended warranties an expensive gamble found the median price for coverage was just over $1,200. The results of the 13th survey, its most recent, showed that 55% of owners who purchased an extended warranty didn't use it, and those who did use it spent hundreds more for the coverage than they saved in repair costs on average. That's the paragraph.
Yep. Yep. You're right. Everything you said is right. This is what I've been saying for years and years and years. It's a situation. You said $1,200. We've seen them north of that a lot. One of the sinful things that's done is they sell you a new car. The shop sells you a new car. Whoever sells you a new car. Now, you have a three-year warranty. They sell you the warranty telling you this will kick in after the 3 years. Now, why would you let somebody keep your money for 3 years and not have any benefit from it, and then all of a sudden that thing kicks in at the end of your first warranty? Folks, when we have a car in for an aftermarket warranty, first of all, they want all your maintenance records. The other day, they canceled a lady's coverage on her radiator because she hadn't had her transmission service done at the appropriate time. And I said to this guy who had his pants on his head, I said, explain to me what the relationship is between the transmission and the radiator that would cause you to void the warranty on the radiator you're supposed to put in. And he goes, well, the transmission has fluid that goes through the radiator, and the radiator is an integral part of cooling the transmission fluid off, or cooling the transmission fluid. And I said, that's not what we got on our plate. We got a bad radiator. It's leaking coolant. The transmission cooler that's inside the radiator is just fine. He says, nope. She hasn't kept up on her maintenance. We're not going to cover the radiator. And I said, that's got to be the stupidest reason. I'll bet your mother hit you in the head with a frying pan at one time in your life, and then he hung up on me. But here's another thing is they won't pay for Freon. They won't pay sales tax, shop supplies, and environmental charges. And then they want us to keep the car for a couple of days while they have something shipped in from Mexico or Costa Rica or Japan. And then they want me to install their part, and then they want me to warranty their part. So the warranty is now through you, Mr. Salem, because you installed it. No, it isn't. I didn't make a dime on it. You sent the part. Does the customer get a rental car for 3 days? No, that's not in their policy. I can give you story after story how they just take advantage of people and they never do what they say. People have this crazy idea that they're going to break down and they're just going to write a check. Sometimes you have to wait 2 days for a guy to show up to look at the car, and when you do, you recognize him as the auto mechanics teacher from a school that you went to high school with, and he wasn't any smarter now than he was back in 1972. And he's the one that's going to draw the line on what you're going to cover and whatnot. Oh boy, Al, you wound me up bad, and I'm going to hang up on you now. All right. Jerry, you're up next.
Good morning, Mark. Got a Dodge Durango, a 2009.
Okay.
And I've noticed oil consumption, and when I can get it down to about 500 miles before I need to add a quart. But and I've done this on three separate occasions where I've done this, and I'll replace the PCV valve,
uh-huh.
And the oil consumption almost, I mean, it goes, let's say it goes to the point where it doesn't consume anywhere near as much oil anymore.
Okay, I can fix it.
I can get almost 1,200 miles.
I can fix it. Okay, well, the PCV valve is the positive crankcase ventilator. It sucks on one side of the engine, and its job is to suck the fumes from inside the engine and burn them again. Okay, that's what the PCV valve is. Now, think about this. I got a vacuum cleaner hooked up to your engine. It's running. Okay, I got a vacuum cleaner hooked up. Don't I have to have fresh air coming in? So I have to have what we call cross flow? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Now, if the fresh air port is plugged, then I'm going to suck hard on the motor, but there's no hole on the other end. So I'm going to suck the oil out of your car. So on the somewhere in that system, is this a V8 on your car or a 6-cylinder or what?
It's a V8.
Okay. The PCV valve will be on one side, and on the other side there'll be a hose that goes to the air filter or something like that. And then you take the top of the air filter off, and inside of there is a piece of foam or some kind of a filter. So the first thing you want to do is make sure the hole in the valve cover is okay, because the fresh air goes into the air cleaner. From there, it gets filtered again. Then it's sucked into the passenger side of the car. That fresh air goes all the way through the car and hits the vacuum cleaner on the driver's side of the engine, and then it burns it again. So most of the time when you have a PCV valve, or you have a problem with a PCV valve, or you have an oil consumption problem, as you well described, which is, by the way, I don't get that kind of description very often, then the other side, you need to work on the other side. So you can put a new PCV valve in it, but you got to work on the airflow on the other side of the motor. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. But I've replaced the PVC valve three separate times and the same thing's happened.
Well, you don't understand. It's not the PCV valve.
I understand it's the whole flow.
Okay.
But what got me on the whole thing was, I guess my brain wasn't making the connection completely that... I'm thinking something was clogging the PCV valve.
Okay.
So that's what I was thinking.
Well, if you take it off and you shake it and it goes click, 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 then it's loose and it's working. So,
okay.
Anyway, I can only tell you that. The thing you said to me was after I put a new PCV valve, everything's okay for some period of time. Well, I'm eliminating engine blow-by. I'm eliminating bad rings. I'm eliminating internal pressure because of what you said. So I don't want to talk about all that kind of stuff because what you said is related to the PCV valve, and you've put three of them in there, which is the definition of insanity. I'm saying I want you to look on the other side of the system. I think your problem's there. So I don't think it has anything to do with the PCV valve. I think it has to do with the fresh air intake port. Anyway, Jerry, got to move on. Don, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, man, I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
I have a 2007 and a half, I guess it matters, because it's the new body style, the Chevrolet 2500.
Okay.
And I keep getting the engine light for, like, the gas cap. What's that called? The
evaporative system.
The evaporative system. So I place the gas cap, and then it goes off, and then it came back on. And then I started to notice that my cruise control intermittently decides not to work also.
Okay.
Is that a vacuum thing? Is that something that, are they connected at all?
Okay. Well,
I just noticed when that light came on that they both stopped working.
Okay. All right. I don't know the answer to that,
though.
But to chase that is going to be chasing your tail. The answer to your question is available after you fix the evaporative system or after you fix the cruise control. So if you fix the evaporative leak and then you turn around and Jerry sa- or Don says, oh, cruise control's fixed, then you know one fixed the other. But to go in there with the idea that there's a relationship is not a proper diagnostic function. We're not supposed to do that. We're supposed to fix problems one at a time.
1 minute.
So we could go in and do your cruise control and find out where it's at. But here's the deal. Your evaporative system in your 07, we're going to suck the fumes off the tank. Okay? So it does have a vacuum-operated system. So if you lose vacuum in that system and you create a vacuum leak, then you're going to have an engine code for a lean condition, the O2 sensor screaming lean, and you're going to have a rough idle. And you didn't say anything about that. So
the only relationship
between the two is there's probably vacuum that helps operate the servo that throttles you up, and there could be vacuum, there is going to be vacuum, somewhere in that evaporative system. But again, it's only, you can answer the question after you fix the one or both of those. I can't answer the question. I can't answer that. But I will answer your question that says, yes, there is vacuum. Normally, there's vacuum related to both sources. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, 602-508-0960. We got open lines available, 602-508-0960. Let me clear up a mess I made. Al called in. And he read us a paragraph from the car section of the newspaper about extended warranties. He felt it was necessary to call back and say that he was on my side on that, which makes me, I know, that he took offense to what I said, thinking that he was for warranties. That's not the case. I didn't mean it to be that way. I understood that Al was saying, look at this, and that coincides with what Mark says. So, Al, I apologize. I knew you were on my side, but I didn't do a good job of not beating you up over you reading the thing about warranties. So I apologize for that. Tim, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking the call. I've got a 2004 Chevy Silverado 3500. It's the Duramax. 231,000 miles. It got original brakes on it. When the tires come off to do a rotation, I look at the pads, and the pads are still super thick, but I'm getting a pulsating in the brake pedal.
Okay.
If I replace the rotors and keep the original pads, which still have the substantial amount of pad there, is there a drawback to that?
Well, first of all, we need, is it got rear disc too?
Yes, I believe so.
So we got to kind of make sure that it's coming from the front end of the car, and I'm going to assume that you feel like it is. The second thing is putting new rotors on at this particular point is a very expensive jump. Those rotors can be $200 a piece. I want you to here, you don't have a dial indicator by chance, do you?
I do.
Oh, well then, take the wheel off. And put the dial indicator against the rotor, and then with the screwdriver or your hands, rotate the rotor. And the rotor should be firmly attached to the car, and it should not need the wheel to hold it firm, but if it does, then take the wheel off, put the lug nuts back on the rotor, and just rotate it. And I don't want to see 30-40 thousandths gap, or 30 to 40 thousandths worth of run out. I would hope we'd be down in the 10,000 plus or minus range. So I think it's not going to be the pads, and I think you said 231,000 miles you've never done the brakes?
Never have. It's incredible.
Okay. Well, you got to be driving to your girlfriend's house in Montana every time you drive that thing, because you hold a world record in my, and I'm not doubting you, don't misunderstand. That's an awesome number. That just tells me you do lots and lots of highway driving. So I think what you really need to do is you really need to find out which rotor's warped and just fix that one, which would be machine it. Now, you could take the rotor off and have it machined, but we also have some pretty fancy pieces of equipment where we just take the caliper off and we grind the rotor. so we can grind it where it lives. Now, last but not least, I want you to take the caliper off both fronts and slide the rotor off the studs. Are you with me so far?
Yes, sir.
Then I want you to flip and look at the back of the rotor and the face of the hub. If there's any dirt or mud in there, I need those two pieces, that back of the rotor and the face of the hub, I need them to match perfectly. I can't have a booger in there, because if I have a booger in there, when I slide the rotor on, it's going to be warped. I'm going to have a high and a low spot. Does that all make sense to you?
Explain it one more time. I lost you somewhere there. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Just in the part when you take the caliper off.
Yeah, just take the caliper off, because you can't get the rotor off with the caliper on.
Okay, gotcha.
So you're just going to take the caliper off and set it over to the side. Then you're going to slide the rotor off.
Got it.
And at the back of the rotor, the front of the hub, we clean that out real good with compressed air and a piece of sandpaper. Put it back on. Put your rotor back on. Then put your caliper back on. Don't bleed the caliper. Don't mess with the caliper. Just take it off and set it aside. And you're going to leave the hose on it too, right? You're going to leave the hose on it.
On the caliper.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. No, I won't.
Okay.
I'll move that in.
All righty. Well, good.
I have two more questions, if I may ask.
Okay, be quick.
Okay, next one is, when I go to defrost, I don't get any air blowing out on the windshield.
Okay.
You know, like when there's ice on the windshield, it won't blow anything upwards. Is that one of those little plastic motors?
Well, it could very well be that. I don't know what system you have, because your truck's an 04, but... I know that I want you to picture a Y, and we've got the bottom of the Y is the air coming out. And so we got cold air in on the top and hot air in, and that's called the mixer, and that's where we mix it. But then we also send it to one of three places. We send it to defrost, center vent, or floor. So what I want you to do is I want you to go out and practice and make sure what we have of those three. Can you send it to the floor? All to the floor. Can you send it to the dash? All to the dash, which means at the dash it's not coming out of the defrost and it's not coming out of the floor. Then you go to defrost, and if the air's not coming out of the defrost, then where's it coming from? But that's not an easy fix. On a 1 to 10 scale, it's a number 6 in the labor, maybe number 7, depending on where the problem's at. But it's going to be some electronic motor, or one of the doors is stuck shut, so it's going to be something in that area. But I want you to... When you go into the repair shop, I want you to be armed with more than just, you know, I don't have defrost. So I've given you a process that's going to save you some diagnostic money. If you can say, dash gives me only dash and not defrost and not floor. Floor gives me only floor but not defrost. Gives me only floor and nothing out of the center vents or dashboard, we call it, or the defrost. So if you do that, then that helps the guy, you know, figure out what's the matter with it. You got one more question. I got to take a break when we come back. But Les, you hang on. I'm going to give Tim one more question, and then you're up. We'll be back. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. I got a little business to take care of. Folks, it's really unusual for a shop to be under the same family for years and years and years. But since 1982 in Sun City, Auto Dynamics has been under the same ownership. They're family-owned and operated. They're proud because they have quality service, good technicians. They're not paid a commission or a percentage of a repair bill. Therefore, they don't sell you unnecessary parts or repairs because they're just too doggone busy. So if you're in Sun City, the oldest shop under the same family is Auto Dynamics, and they're on north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. Okay, you got one more question there, Tim.
Thank you very much. It's got the Allison transmission at 75,000. I had it, the oil changed over at Tri-City. They did a great job. Those are great guys there. I'm closer now to strictly diesel. They offer a trans flush with a BG product, which I think is, that stuff is great, but maybe you have a different opinion there. But by doing a total flush, am I safe in doing that?
Yeah. It's 75,000 miles, right?
No, this is, I got 231,000 right now, but at 75,000, I did a flush.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't, first of all, don't say the name of the shop anymore, okay?
Okay.
Okay, don't say the name of the shop, because that's, I wouldn't have done it that way. At 75,000, I would have pulled the pan and done the filter, the spin-on filter, and done the pan. I would want to look inside the pan for broken snap rings or excessive aluminum, excessive brass, excessive clutch wear, that kind of stuff. Then I'd want to do the flush. So I want to go in there and look at the pan first. So I don't know about flushing it. Strictly Diesel certainly is capable of doing that. I'm not an additive guy, but I've got a lot of shops that I respect that are additive guys. So it's just something that, you know, they like Valvoline and I like Chevron. They like Michelins and I like Toyos. That kind of stuff. That's okay. But I don't sell BG products. I don't sell BG products. But I'm sure that Strictly Diesel, you need to call them and just say, can you flush my entire transmission? And tell them you had the filter and the pan pulled the last time. And just see what they charge you for. You're going to use a synthetic fluid in there. It's going to cost you a bunch of money. And most of us use clear hoses on our pull and push machines. So we see the brown coming in and we see red going out. And that's a good thing. So when the brown stops coming out, that means we flush the whole transmission and we disconnect everything. So yeah, Strictly Diesel would be a great place to do it. And if they want to use a cleaning additive or some kind of a transmission additive, that's between you and him. But Nate's a good guy, so he'll do whatever you want. Let's go to Les. Les, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, I got an oil question on a 73 Ford Ranchero with a 351. Did an oil change with 2040 extended mile oil, and now my oil pressure, when I first turn it on and it's cold, it goes to 50-55 psi, stays there no matter what the speed. But once it gets warm, I see about 15 psi at idle and up about 25 to 30 psi cruising at about 2000 rpm.
Okay, it's just normal. What you're describing is normal.
That's normal?
Yeah.
I thought the 15 was low.
No. No, think about this. Zero is low. In order for you to have 15, you've got the appropriate restriction. Now, you'd be surprised, but don't tell anybody this, but some of the newer model cars actually run lower than that because they have water as oil. So any oil pressure is fine. I would not worry about it at all. Plus, what kind of car was this?
A 73 Ranchero.
Okay. First of all,
170,000.
Okay, first of all, it's a Ford. We shouldn't be talking about this because, you know, I'm going to tease you, right? You know I'm going to tease you.
I knew that.
Okay.
Okay.
I think what I would do is I'd probably borrow or rent an oil pressure gauge from somebody. I'd pull out the oil pressure switch, which I think is going to be on the driver's side near the filter. So plug that manual gauge in and go drive it and watch the manual gauge. It usually comes with a 6-foot hose. You bring it through the crack of the hood, across the windshield wiper, and pull it inside. Sometimes I just tape it to the outside of the windshield so I can see it. But really and truly, I wouldn't be concerned about 15 pounds of oil pressure, especially when you're using 2040. Now, let me explain. It flows like a 20 weight when it's cold. It does not go from water to peanut butter. It's the properties of the oil. So it flows like a 20 weight when it's cold and a 40 weight when it's hot. Your old Ranchero is not used to 20 weight. But really and truly, if all you is the lowest number you got is 15, move on. Take your wife to dinner or your girlfriend, one or the other.
Okay.
All righty.
Thank you.
You betcha.
No problem. Thanks.
Brett, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. First-time caller, but I've been listening to you for probably since you first started in radio. Love your show.
Thank you.
Those guys mentioned that at a radio show, they must be really idiots to have lost you. But and plus the guys that are talking over there about cars are not just about as bad. But anyway, so I have a 07 Toyota Tundra that I've got tire pressure warning on my dash, and I've topped off the tires a couple times and checked it a couple more times in the last month or so, and can't get that light to go off. And I guess I'm assuming that one of my sensors in my tires is bad, and wondering how I find out which one it is. My tires are fairly new, so it's going to cost me money to remove the tires and check the sensor. What do you think?
No. We have equipment that we just walk around your tires and talk to the sensors. How long ago did you have the new tires put on?
Oh, maybe about a year ago, but I don't have a lot of miles on the truck.
All right. Well, if it was a week ago, I would say go back to the shop because Salem and my staff have broken TPS, tire pressure monitors, inside the car when we change tires, inside the wheel when we change tires. It's this box on the back side of the valve stem, and if you're if you're not paying attention, you're going to break it, and then the customer comes back a week or 3 weeks later, and you go in there and it's broken. So and you leave that door open. If it's broken, I'll pay for it. If it's not, you pay for it. We just walk around and talk to each one of them. We'll figure out. You don't have to take the tire apart. You don't have to do anything. You're just going to have somebody with the appropriate equipment to walk around and talk to the sensors or listen to the sensors. It could be in or out, but that's how you do it. In your case, you just have one light that says tire pressure low, yes?
I've got one sensor. Yeah, correct. But I don't know which tire it is.
Exactly. And so in that particular case, I would take all of them up 5 and see what happens. And then I'd take all up, go up 10 and go down 10 from where you're at. And just see if one of them's out of range. But if it comes on and it's this, you know, you only have one light on that old of a car. So if it comes on, then we know it's going to be a bad sensor because you took them 10 up and 10 down. So you put a 20 PSI swing in there and you still have the problem. So, you know, you just be glad you don't own a Ford because we replace those about every week. So your Tundra should be okay.
I love this Tundra. It's been no problems at all in the over 10 years I've had it.
Great truck. The Toyota makes a wonderful truck. A wonderful truck. They always have since the 20R motor when I worked on cars 100 years ago.
That was my first truck.
Yeah, so there's no problem there. Well, anyway, thank you very much. All righty. Let me talk real quick about this thing out in Maricopa. It was like the first story on all the news people, and they had people standing out there in front of the Circle K, and they were standing next to the lid of the underground tank, and, you know, this gas station has a bunch of water in it. There's cars broke down from here to Los Angeles, and they point to the lid on the ground, and they've got water in their fuel tanks, and people are breaking down, and it's thousands of dollars worth of repair, and Circle K saying, you know, we'll work with you and all this other kind of stuff. Oh, gosh. Obviously, there was no expert involved in that. Let me explain. If you aspirate liquid water into your engine, you're going to cause significant damage. There's no question about that. Water doesn't compress. Neither does liquid gasoline. But on everything that's fuel injected, and that's really from the middle of the 90s, everything that's fuel injected takes gasoline and sprays it in like hairspray. Okay? It atomizes the gasoline and it makes these ever so small particles and they spray it into the car. Well, they do the same thing with water. And so the repair is simple. You take it to the garage, tow it to the garage. The guy empties the fuel tank. Sometimes you take the fuel tank out and pour it out. Sometimes you just stick a big pump inside there. You lift the nose of the car up, shove all the fuel to the back of the tank, suck it all out, put it in a what we call an environmental drum. At that particular point, you drop it down, you replace the fuel filter, you fill it up with 10 gallons of gas, you start it up and you go drive it. And it'll be fine. 99 times out of 100, it'll be fine. Now, one time out of 100, there'll be a miss or a problem. Now, if the spark plug is really hot and we put water on it, then it's like a bulb. I don't know how many of you have ever been as dumb as I am, but I remember one time I had a hot light bulb in my hand and I thought it wouldn't burn me if I cooled it off, stick it in cold water. It blew up the light bulb instantaneously, scared me, and then all of a sudden I had wet my pants and I was just a little boy and I was banned for two reasons. Number one, I just wet my pants. Number two, I knew my dad or mom was going to be mad at me for breaking a light bulb. The fact of the matter is that there's just no big deal. This happens a lot. People put the wrong gasoline in their diesels, and that's the same process. That can be anywhere, forget the diesel stuff. The gasoline car can be anywhere on the low side of $200 or $300 and on the high side $500 or $600, but it's not thousands of dollars. But that opens up the door. We all know there's people out there that are going to put 2 or 3 gallons in their tank. They're going to say they paid cash. Of course, that won't work because Circle K has cameras. But they're going to say, and they have a major problem in their car, and they're going to blame it that the air conditioning compressor went bad and it's got to be water in the tank. So it's just it was one of the sad days for news, and I was zipping through channels to see if they were all saying the same thing. So as you can imagine, if the segment's like a minute and a half long, I only got to like three channels before I ran out of time. But the idea is that it's just crazy for the news media to set that example, because everybody who's had any kind of problem at all is now going to appear at Circle K's doorstep, and hopefully they hired experts to help them sift through all that stuff. Do we have a caller, Gil?
Yes, we do. Say hello to Bob.
Bob, good morning to you. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mark. My wife's got a 2015 Equinox, and I changed the oil myself. I use full synthetic, and I use those Fram Ultra synthetic filters, and they say they're worn, 20,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's okay to just change the filter? You know, I change it when it's got about 5%. She's got about 7,000 miles usually. So if I just change the filter every other oil change, I think it's okay.
How much does that filter cost?
$8.50.
Okay. How much is just the cheapest one cost? $3?
You can get one on Rock Auto for $1. But I wouldn't put one of those in my car.
All right. But, see, this is exactly what they hope. We got Bob, and we got the hook in him. We're going to sell him a premium oil filter, and it's going to be embedded with diamonds and gold. And we're going to use camel urine to help clean the oil as it goes through the filter. And it's going to last forever, but change it every time you do it, or change it once in the middle of while you do it, because it's really a good thing. And that is all BS. I'm telling you unequivocally that every oil filter that's sold in the United States probably comes from one of two companies. So all they do is paint the shell differently and put it in a different box. Let me change your question. Mark, do you have some expensive cars? Yes, I do. I have a Corvette that's a twin turbo. I have a Camaro with a blower on it. And I have a Dodge truck that's pretty raunchy. Anyway, Mark, what kind of filters do you put in it? The cheapest ones I can find. Well, Mark, aren't you scared you're going to cost you an engine? No, I'm not. Well, does this new fancy-dancy oil filter that's impregnated with camel urine, doesn't that do a better job? I don't care that it's going to do a better job. What my cheap oil filter is doing just a fine job, because I'm running 200,000 miles on my car as well. And if the filter didn't filter, I probably wouldn't make it that long. I don't agree that you change the filter. You're not changing the filter. I think that's a bad idea. I think it's a bad idea to have a super fancy filter. I think you should just continue to change your oil as you should, and I think you should do the oil filter, and I think you should think about getting rid of the idea that your car's going to love you more if you put a fancy dancy filter in it. And that's how they create that. That they create the perception that your car is going to love you more, so it won't break down as often if you give me premium oil, premium gas, and premium filters. And that's just not true. I've got people that over-service their cars, and I still put radiators. I still put spark plugs. I still do hoses and belts. I still do windshield wiper motors on those cars. So the car's not going to love you anymore, but it's okay with me if you do the fancy filter, but I wouldn't take, if there's a warranty with the filter, I certainly wouldn't take liberties with that warranty. So you make sure you do what they say if you want their warranty, and document it as well. Okay, my name is Mark Salem, and I'm at mark@marksalem.com. Mark Salem's my website. You can go in there and look at FAQs. You can go in there and look at the best car repair shops. And our FAQs are questions we've had on the radio since 1988. So I've kept specific track of all the questions, and I've done my best to answer them on our FAQs. Please wear your seatbelt. Please drive safely. And if somebody does something nice for you, like let you in, open up your driver's window and wave at them and say thank you. God bless all of you, and drive safe.